Well, we continue our evening series in the closing chapters of John's Gospel. Jesus has been arrested, and as we saw last week, Jesus dominates the scene. He's master of the situation. Has he gone into hiding? No, he deliberately goes to a place where he may be found. Is he taken by force? No, he steps forward and he presents himself to his captors. And he only has to speak his name, and this small army of well-armed men are driven back and thrown to the ground. We then see him commanding the arresting officers. He says, therefore, if you seek me, let my disciples go their way. And we see him commanding Peter, put your sword into the sheath. Peter, do you think I need protecting? And with this, he then volunteers himself into the hands of those who have come to arrest him. And what do they do? Well, verse 12, they bind him. Suppose we say that Jesus is handcuffed and led away. Why do they bind him? He hasn't put up a fight, has he? He's not putting up any struggle. He's clearly volunteering himself into their hands. He's going to go quietly. Why bind him? Well, it says more about them than it says about him. You may know C.S. Lewis's Lion, Witch in the Wardrobe. And there's a particular passage where Aslan, the lion, he surrenders himself into the hands of the White Witch and her minions. And C.S. Lewis describes it like this. He says, a howl and a gibber of dismay went up from the creatures when they first saw the great lion pacing toward them. And for a moment, even the witch seemed to be struck with fear. And she recovered herself and gave a wild, fierce laugh. The fool has come. Bind him fast. Lucy and Susan held their breaths, waiting for Aslan's roar and his spring upon his enemies. But it never came. Now, it's only a story, isn't it? But it's a window into our scene here. They're powerless before the Christ, aren't they? They're afraid of him. He is the lion of the tribe of Judah. He only has to roar. So they bind him. Oh, how brave they are. Jesus doesn't resist. He goes willingly to the cross. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me? Well, please have the reading open in front of you. John 18 and verses 12 to 27. We have three things to say. And the first point is this. And it's the longest point. It's really just setting the scene. Or maybe it's a scene of contrasts. See if you can spot them as we go through it all. Well, look at verse 12, then a detachment of troops and the captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him, and they led him away to Annas first, for he was father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now, who's Annas? Why take Jesus to Annas first? Well, he's the real power in the land. He'd been high priest from 6 AD to 15 AD, and in the time we're working on here, that was about 15 years ago. But in 15 AD, the Romans removed him. But since if you were a high priest, you were to be high priest for life. In the eyes of many of the Jews, because it was the Romans, the occupying power, that removed Annas, in their eyes, he's the only legitimate high priest there is. He still is the high priest. And what's more, since Annas's removal, no less than five of his sons have been high priest. And the one who's there now is Caiaphas, who's his son-in-law. So you can imagine the sort of man he is. He's like a sort of patriarch, isn't he? He's the real power behind the priesthood. He's the one who pulls the strings. He may come from an aristocratic family. He may be very respectable, but he's a fixer. He's a politician. There's something sort of Mandelsonian about him. The dark arts. And he's leading a self-serving clique who are out to protect their position. You don't have to take my word for it. John tells us, John 11. We read, then the chief priests, this is after Lazarus had been raised from the dead, then the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered a council and said, what shall we do? For this man, that's Jesus, works many signs. If we let him alone like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and nation. Look, if we don't do something about this Jesus, we're going to lose our grip on power. Let me read verse 49. One of them, Caiaphas, being high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all. Nor do you consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and not that the whole nation should perish." He's saying, "Oh, come on, boys. You know what we have to do. Do I have to spell it out? If this Jesus is causing us trouble, if he's threatening our position, and therefore if our position, he's therefore threatening the whole safety and happiness of the nation, you know what we need to do. We just need to remove him. That's all. It's better that one man dies. Better this Jesus dies and the whole nation perish." And we read verse 53. From that day on, they plotted to put him to death. There's a self-serving clique at the top of the nation. They're politicians. They're fixers. They want to hold on to power. And now here's Annas. He's the old high priest. He's father-in-law of the present high priest, Caiaphas. The very same one we just read about, who advised the Jews that it was expedient for one man to die for the nation. And there he is. They come to Annas first. He's the one who pulls the strings. He's the one who's really in control. And we see it's a conspiracy, isn't it? This is a stitch-up. Jesus is in the hands of unscrupulous politicians, pragmatists. They may on paper be holy men, but they're masters of the dark arts. And what they want to do is keep the Romans on side and then dispose of this little local difficulty. That's why he's gone to Annas. Well, while Jesus is in the house with Annas, we read that Simon Peter is outside in the courtyard. How does he find his way into the courtyard? Well, John tells, doesn't he? Verse 15, Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Now that disciple was known to the high priest and went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door outside. He's locked out. Then the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out, spoke to her who kept the door, and brought Peter in. Now, who's this other disciple with the right connections? We don't know. We're not told. Maybe it was John. But Peter's now on the inside, in the courtyard. And while he's there, he's challenged by the girl on the gate, verse 17. She puts it in the negative. She says, "You're not one of his disciples, are you?" And Peter says, "No." And being night, and being Jerusalem, being half a mile above sea level, it's cold. So we leave Peter warming his hands by the fire. He's rubbing shoulders with the servants and with the temple police, the arresting officers. Or says John, "Let's go back indoors." Verse 19, the high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. The high priest there is Annas. "Tell me more." Jesus answered him, "I spoke openly to the world. I also taught in the synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always meet. And in secret I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me, what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said." Now, he gets asked a question, doesn't he? "Tell me your teaching. Tell me about your disciples." Why doesn't Jesus answer the question? Well, remember who this is. This is Annas, who's not interested in the truth. He just wants information so he can frame a charge. He just wants Jesus out of the way. He wants to get rid of his disciples as well. So Jesus says nothing about his disciples to protect them. Doesn't want to give their names. And then they're rounded up. So he protects them. But then Jesus says, why the sudden interest in my teaching? It's no secret. I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always meet. And in secret, I've said nothing. In fact, Annas, I preached just around the corner from you. I preached in the temple. If you were so interested in my teaching, why didn't you turn up and come and hear me? Verse 21, why do you ask me? And Jesus sees straight through Annas. And of course his words imply a rebuke, don't they? He's been arrested. Under Jewish law, it was illegal to interrogate Jesus. It was illegal to ask him questions like that in case he incriminated himself. There was the law that protected the situation. The correct procedure was to call witnesses. And the witnesses would come, they would be cross-examined. Hence an implied rebuke. Ask those who heard me what I said to them. Call the witnesses. That's your job. That's your duty. You're to call the witnesses. Do your duty. At which point a minor official takes offense, verse 22. And when he had said these things, while the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, he slaps him across the face, saying, "Do you answer the high priest like that? Who do you think you are?" But something has happened. We haven't seen it before. For the first time, Jesus is struck. It's a slap across the face. Within hours, Jesus will be so badly beaten, he will no longer be recognizable. And a few hours later, they'll nail him to a cross. It's the first few stones of the avalanche, isn't it? When there's an avalanche, the first few boulders, the first few stones come down. But then we know that the avalanche is coming. And coming is an avalanche of God's wrath, which will crush the Son of God. Jesus answered him, "If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me? You ask me, you want to know the truth. Why have you taken offense? What have I said wrong? Why strike me?" Verse 24, then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas the high priest. There's that sense you feel with Annas, well, we're not getting anywhere here, aren't we? Caiaphas can sort it out. Well, says John, let's go back outside. What's been going on outside? Verse 25. Now Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. Therefore they said to him, "You are not also one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I'm not." Maybe again you can see the scene. There's Peter. He's surrounded by people, but he's trying to look inconspicuous. People are talking among themselves. Soon they're talking about him. Someone said, I'm sure he's one of them. I'm sure he's one of this Jesus' followers. And then others begin to take up the question, don't they? Verse 25, therefore they said to him, there are many people who are now questioning him. And they're all saying, "You're not one of them, are you?" And Peter thinks, if I hesitate, I'm sunk. I mustn't give myself away. So he says, no, not me, not me. You've got it wrong. But they're not letting go. Now remember, it's night. In the Garden of Gethsemane, it was difficult to make out faces. And outside in the high priest's courtyard, there's not much more light, is there? It's difficult to recognize people. But now there's someone who was in the garden. He was with the arresting party. He's a servant of the high priest. He's also a relative of Malchus, the one whose ear Peter cut off. This could spell big trouble for Peter. Because this person can identify him not just as one of Jesus' disciples, but the one who drew blood, the one maybe who's guilty of attempted murder. And maybe Peter's thinking, who knows where this could end? Verse 26, one of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him? Aren't you the one? I'm sure I recognize you. I saw you in the garden." And again Peter says, "Me? No." And Mark in his gospel says he began to curse and swear. "I don't know this man of whom you speak." And it's Peter's third denial. Earlier this night, Peter boasted to Jesus. He said, I will lay down my life for your sake. And Jesus had answered him, Will you lay down your life for my sake? For surely I say to you, the rooster shall not crow till you have denied me three times. And Peter denied again, and immediately a rooster crowed. It will soon be dawn. So we set the scene, haven't we? But I hope you see it's a scene of contrasts. Now, John just tells the story. But he moves between two scenes. He wants us to capture something of the action. There's a swirl of activity that's going on here, and he wants to suck us into what's happening. He wants us to feel the pressure that Peter is under. Maybe he wants us to feel the heat of the fire, and also it's a fire of coals, to smell the fire. And did you feel the darkness? And then Annas, oh, the politician. We can all imagine what sort of man this man is. And then that slap, it's the first violence against Jesus. And we're taken aback by it, aren't we? And then there's Peter. Imagine you've read this for the first time. You think, oh no, Peter, not you. And there are the contrasts. We're outside and then we're inside. There are servants and masters. There's Annas, the politician from Jerusalem. And then there's Peter from Galilee. He's a country boy. Normally he's straight speaking. Not tonight, though. And towering over it all is Jesus. Annas, he's the high priest. But he questions Jesus, the real high priest, the real one who stands before God and represents his people. And there's Annas, on paper, the holiest man in the world, but he's a criminal. And there's Jesus, on paper, he's a criminal, but in reality, he's the holiest man in the world. And there's Annas, covering his path with darkness. And there's Jesus exposing his path with light. And there's Annas' servant, supports him. Don't speak to my master like that. And there's Jesus' servant, Peter, denying him. It's a contrast, isn't it? They're deliberate. There's Annas, Jesus. There's Peter and Jesus. They're both being questioned. But while Jesus speaks the truth, Peter speaks lies. While Jesus suffers for speaking the truth, Peter lies to avoid suffering. Jesus is laying down his life for others. Peter is seeking to save his skin. Jesus protects his disciples. Peter denies his master. Jesus fears the Lord. Peter fears men. And the contrasts are significant. John says, look. Don't rush through this scene. Don't think, well, not much is going on here. It's a bit boring. What's Annas about? What's all this about? He says, stop, stop, stop. Here are real people. This is flesh and blood. This is real incidents. Pick it up. Feel it. Watch what's going on. And what do you see? Who towers above it all? Who is a man, but we've never seen a man like this? Look at him. Can you see his beauty, his majesty, his glory? Even the best of men is cowering and denying him. But here stands the real man, the only begotten Son, full of grace and truth. And it's night, but it's the nighttime of the soul, the darkness. But if you look, you will see the light of the world shining in the darkness. And this is the Jesus we're called to follow. Well, let's move on. Let's unpick these two characters, Peter and Annas. So point number two, Peter's fall. How did it happen? Only hours before, Peter's chatting away. In fact, in the early chapters, they have a Passover meal, don't they, in the upper room. At the beginning of the Passover meal, Peter's very, very talkative. He's chatting away. Until he's stung by Jesus' words, after which we hear nothing from Peter Chapter 13, Simon Peter said to Jesus, Lord, where are you going? Jesus answered him, where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you shall follow me afterward. Peter said to him, Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for your sake. Jesus answered him, will you lay down your life for my sake? Most assuredly, I say to you, the rooster shall not crow till you have denied me three times. And now Peter goes quiet. He can't get Jesus' words out of his head. Those words of Jesus seem to burn themselves into his consciousness. You just said, I'm going to deny you. Well, Lord, you're wrong. I love you, and I'll prove that I love you. And of course, in the garden, he gets his big chance, doesn't he? Here come 600 armed men. They're coming to arrest Jesus. Step forward, Peter the resolute, Peter the hero. He's got a sword in his hand. And he goes for the main man. There's Malchus, the servant of the high priest. He's the chief arresting officer. Peter this night is going to shed blood. He's coming to save Jesus. Lord, you are wrong. I do love you. I'm ready to lay down my life for you. Deny you? Never, never, never. And with that he draws his sword. And Jesus says, Peter, put your sword into the sheath. Well, maybe he's proved his point, hasn't he? See, it was Peter who stood up. Peter who defended you. But now we're in the high priest's courtyard. It's unfamiliar territory. Verse 17. Then the servant girl who kept the door said to Peter, you're not also one of this man's disciples, are you? She puts it in the negative, doesn't she? You're not one of them, are you? Peter could contradict her. He could say, yes, I am. But it's hard to contradict someone, isn't it? It's much easier just to agree. You're not one of them, are you? No, I'm not one of them. But Peter, that's a lie. Yeah, but she's only a girl. There's no harm done. But now Peter finds himself surrounded. Now, in one sense, I think it's much easier to make a stand with strangers, isn't it? All those strangers coming at him out of the darkness. But maybe as the minutes pass and Peter's there warming his hands, you know, it's like round a fire, you start talking to people, don't you? You struck up a bit of a rapport. You start to share things, talk things. Maybe there's a bit of a laugh, a joke. Maybe Peter struck up a bit of a rapport. But now they're talking about Peter. It's not just a girl who's asking the question, who can be fobbed off easily. They're all asking the question. Therefore, they said to him, you're not one of his disciples, are you? And Peter's feeling the heat. The gate is shut. Christ is nowhere to be seen. Perhaps he feels he's trapped like a rat in a barrel. And if I hesitate, I'll give myself away. He denied it and said, I'm not. But Peter's now afraid. I'm on a road I can't get off. That little sin that was so easy to say has now grown. And the fear of man brings a snare. And he's denied with his lips what he actually believes in his heart. There's a contradiction going on inside the man. He's breached his conscience. He's wrecked his defenses. He's not looking to the Lord. He's looking to save himself. And then the sucker punch. Someone who saw you in the garden. Someone who was there. Someone who can identify you. Someone who can make life very, very difficult for you, Peter. While the sermons of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, didn't I see you in the garden with him? I'm sure it's you. I recognize you. It's you, isn't it? Peter denied him again, and immediately a rooster crowed. And it's too late. Peter's fall. So what's the lesson? little sins. A servant girl at the gate. You're not one of them, are you? No. And it's easy, isn't it? It's so easy to say it. And who's going to know? She's a nobody. I'm anonymous round here. Who is ever going to find out? A little sin. But if it's a little sin, why jeopardize everything for a little sin? And of course, to call it a little sin betrays an attitude of heart. I've graded sins. I've compartmentalized my life. There are some sins I don't have to take seriously. There are some sins that don't matter half as much as others. But you see, I sin against an infinite God. And is there a little hell with little torments for little sinners? And Peter, where do little sins lead? So I'm in the office, and I could go that way, but I'm actually going to go this way. Because if I go this way, I hope to see her. And she'll be there. And maybe I just like her smile. Of course I'm not going to commit adultery with her. Don't be ridiculous. But I like her smile. And it cheers me. I feel so much better when she smiles at me. So I won't go out of the office that way. I'll go out of the office that way. And it's a little sin. The fungus that eats away at the heart of a mighty elm tree begins life as a single spore. A little sin. Remember Jungle Doctor? Maybe you don't. Little leopards grow into big leopards, and big leopards kill. What's the lesson? Beware of your strengths. Now, Peter's a big guy, isn't he? I could prove that to you with number of scriptures, but I'll just take one. Christ is talking about Peter. And John 21 says, "Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself, you put your clothes on, and you walked where you wished." Yeah? No one ever got in Peter's way. He walked where he wished. When Peter walked down the street, other people got out the way. No one can stop Peter. No one gets in Peter's way. He's a bear of a man. And if anyone can tough it out, if anyone can go the distance, it's Peter. Not afraid of anyone. And anyway, isn't he the man who loves Christ? So when he says, "I'm willing to lay down my life for you," he really means it. Peter can imagine committing many sins, but he can't imagine denying Jesus. My friend, what sins can't I imagine committing? Because I'm strong. I'd never do that. I'd never do that. Oh, I could do that. I could do that. But never that. Because I'm strong. What does it say? "Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall." Beware your strengths. You might just rely upon them. And what's the lesson? Peter sins to avoid trouble, doesn't he? He sins to avoid heartache, because if that person identifies him, he could be done for attempted murder. So he lies to avoid heartache, only to walk into the biggest heartache of his life. To deny his Lord. What have I done? I've denied my Lord. So whatever your sin is promising you, whatever get out, whatever option it's presenting to you, whatever it's saying to you, there is another way. Take this way. It's trouble free. To avoid heartache. What will I end up doing? The Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. What have I done? And he shed his blood to make my heart clean. What have I done? How can I turn away from the lover of my soul? What have I done? Archbishop Cranmer signed a recantation. He denied his Lord. He repented and was burnt at the stake. As the flames arose around him, he held out the hand that had signed the recantation, and he pushed it into the flames, and he held it there. His right hand was the first to be burnt, and he held it in the flames, and people could hear him say to himself, "My unworthy right hand." What caused him to suffer more than the flame was that he denied his Lord. So whatever sin promises, whatever get out, whatever options, however easy it makes life today, it will never promise you the answer of a good conscience. And it will never bring you the joy of the Lord. Our Christian friends, maybe this evening or today, you're so sure that you love Christ. You think, well, others might stumble, but not me. And you really mean it. You really felt I could lay down my life for him. Or maybe you need a little pastoral chat with Peter. Listen to the word of God and take it to heart. We close with our final point, Annas. It's the question he asks, isn't it? But then it's the question he doesn't ask. Look at verse 19. The high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. Hey, sounds a good question, doesn't it? What is it you teach and who are your followers? But as you see, he's not interested in the answer. He doesn't want to know the truth. He just wants information so he can frame a charge so he can get rid of Jesus. He's not listening. Now, I want you to think about that. We thought about it last week. Here is Jesus. He's the King. He's the Lord. He's the great I am who I am. Here is God standing before Annas. He sees the human face of God. And here is Messiah. Here is the Christ. So standing in front of him is the one who can answer any question, every question Annas has ever had. The origin of the universe, the meaning of life, what happens after death, heaven, hell. Why is there suffering? Does God exist? How will the world end? Does God punish the guilty? How can I be forgiven? Are you really the Son of God? But Annas is not asking, is he? His mind is elsewhere. Got his own plans. Got his own agenda. He's got to get this done because they need to have Jesus on the cross by at least tomorrow, because then it's a high Sabbath day the following day, and they're running to a timetable. I haven't got to. Let's just get it sorted out. He's got his plans. Jesus doesn't fit in. And then when Jesus gives an answer, there's someone else there who takes offense. Verse 22. And when he had said these things, when he said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, "Do you answer the high priest like that? How dare you talk to the high priest like that?" My friend, as we close, are you very different from Annas? Every Sunday, Christ stands before you. You can ask him any question you like. Maybe it's more than that. Maybe you have a Christian, you grew up in a Christian home where you know Christians. So there's a sense in which every day Christ stands before you. If you have a Bible, you can open a Bible. Every time you open it, Christ is standing in front of you. But do you want to know the truth? If it really is the truth, If it really is the truth, do you want to know it? Do you want answers? Do you want to change? Do you want to be forgiven? Do you want to be right with God? Do you want to get off the treadmill of sin that's destroying you? Do you want to know everlasting joys, pleasures at His right hand forevermore? Do you want to know the truth? Did Jesus really die for sinners? Did He really rise from the dead? Is the Bible true? Can I trust it? Can I afford to get these questions wrong if we're talking about the truth? But maybe like Annas, I don't really want to know. Jesus doesn't fit in. I've got an agenda. There are things I need to do. He gets in the way. He's slowing things down. I want to get rid of Him. And therefore I don't listen. I've got my plans. And maybe sometimes when you hear something from Christ, you get a bit uppity. You take offense. Fancy saying that to me? Do you know who you're talking to? And what's really happening? Christ is in front of you. You can speak to Him. You can ask Him the question. You can know the truth. But every time the truth would set you free, you let it slip through your fingers.